Okay. So we are holding on success and obeys by the Mishnah.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, we finally caught up. Okay, Mishnah says, Sadeches and obeys. Mishnah says, Asherla Sapara, somebody borrows a cow, the Shochole Biad Bnoi Biad Abde Biad Shlosoi, and the owner of the cow sends it to him via his own Eved, or his own Shliach, or his own son, or Biad Abde Biad Shlosoi, Biad Bnoi Biad Abde Biad Shlosoi Shal Shoyol, or it by the hands of the son, or the Shliach, or the Eved of the one who's borrowing it, or Mesa, and it dies on the way, Potter. He's Potter because it hasn't yet reached his Rishus. Hasn't yet reached his Rishus, it's still considered in the Rishus of the owner, therefore he's not chayav for it yet, until he himself, because the point is, in this part of the mission, it's not a question of Shliach Lidvar Aveira or not, it's the point that in the next part of the mission we're going to have where the Shoyal asked for it to be sent to a Shliach. That's different, but here, where he didn't ask for it to be sent, he asked him, I want to borrow your part. He didn't tell him how to send it. So therefore, until he himself does b'shis on it, he's not chayav. Right? He's not a chayav. It's not the same thing. There is a specific din that applies.
So whose son is he sending?
It can be either one. It can be his own son, the Mashiel's son, or it can be the Shoyal's son. And the same thing, Abde or Shluchi. On the other hand, Omalei Ashoyal Shalchali Biad Ni Biad Abdi Biad Shluchi, if the Shoyal says to him, send it to me through with your son, or with my son, or with my Eved, or with my Shliach, or he says, send it with your son, or your Eved, or your Shliach, or another possibility is the Mashiel is the one who volunteers, I'm not going to bring it myself, I'm going to send it via my son or my Eved or what have you, or with your son or your Eved or your Shliach. But Amalei Shlach Shoyal Shlach, and the Shoyal tells him, go ahead and do that. In those cases, the Shocho Mesa, then if he sends it and it dies on the way, Chayev, because by accepting that it's going to be sent through that Shliach, either designating the Shliach himself, or in the other case, where he says, I'm going to do it, and he agrees, that's considered already that it's in his Rishus. Mind you, there is a bit of discussion among the Shoinim about this case over here. So, for example, if the Shoyal says, for example, send it in the hand of your Shliach, so the Shoyal himself is not appointing him a Shliach, in what sense then do we say that he's Chayev at that point? So they talk about two different possibilities. He could be Chayev, nevertheless, still considered a Din of Shoyal, because the fact of the matter is he did give his agreement for it, and therefore it's as if he said to the other person, I'm granting you the ability to appoint a shliach. Shliach ois a shliach. So there's shliach ois a shliach. So therefore, effectively, the shoyal is saying, I'm designating you, the mashal, as my shliach, to appoint another shliach to send me the thing. So that's one possibility. The other possibility that a number of Rishonim bring up, it may not be a din mitzad the din of she'ela at all, but rather mitzad the din of orin, which we've talked about before, that if I ask you, for example, if the classic case of Ariv is, for example, where we say, please go and lend money to him, and I will be the Ariv, that if he doesn't pay up, then I'll do it. So then you gave out money based on my consent, based on my request, and therefore that makes me an Ariv and makes me responsible to pay. This would be a similar kind of thing, because I'm asking you to have it go out of your Rishus. And there's nuances in that. For example, the Ritva talks about the idea specifically if he says to send it through an Eved is not considered a reliable person, therefore it can be considered in a certain sense that you're telling them to make it Hefker.
Thank you.
An Eved is not considered reliable enough, and therefore in that sense you can say that you made him actually say that, not just this is leaving your Rishus, but for the moment it's not going to be in anybody's Rishus, sort of, because your Eved is not really reliable enough to be considered to somebody who will necessarily bring it to me. It's not just reliable, but also an Eved doesn't have a custom of his own. If something were to happen to it on the way, then he doesn't have any finances to pay it out of. So therefore the argument is, Eved Kanani, we'll talk about in the Gemara, but for the moment we're assuming Eved Kanani. But that's according to that way of looking at it, it's either because you're telling him to actually remove something from his possession, or even if it's still in his possession, the other way of looking at it is it's still in his possession, but the fact is you're asking him to take it out of his responsibility, out of his out of his shmira, and therefore, on that basis, you told him to send it with somebody, or you told him go ahead and appoint somebody to do it. That can be considered. Then that makes you responsible at that point. Again, mitzad the dinim of ori. Even though it's being sent to a shliach, but mitzad the dinim of ori, because of the dinim of ori, because you're asking him to remove it from his own property, from his own guardianship.
And if it's pshia, what happens?
That's what we're saying. If it dies on the way, that's an example of onus. He's popular if it's pshia. The pashtus, I mean, if the guy who was bringing it was pshia, he'd be the one who was responsible. I don't know. It would probably have to be one of those cases. I don't know exactly, but it would probably have to be one of those cases. The shoyl would have to pay because he's already chayav in whatever happens to it, and then he'll turn around and then sue the eved or the shliach or what have you in Beis Din because you were pshia. And it'd probably be similar to the case that we talked about before about tax of parol abaylam or rishonim, that ultimately the value of it has to be returned to the original owner. Yeah?
It's not considered bala imo, by the way.
No, because the shliach is not working for him. The shliach is just bringing the animal. And all of this also applies when he's returning it. Well, we actually discussed it back in the sixth parak, the question of, is that only talking about when he's returning it, the toich manoi, or is it talking about what's the din about the toich manoi or the achaz manoi, if he's returning it during the time of the rental or the borrowing or whatever, or afterwards, after it already expired? And then we argued over there that after the time of the she'ela expired, you're not considered a she'ela anymore. At that point, you become a shem achinam or shem asachar, as the case may be, as we discussed over there. So yeah, it is necessary to say that. As far as the earlier thing about the shliach, by the way, Rashi points out that we had a machlokes back in Bava Kamma. Who is the shliach? Are we talking about, did this shliach have to be appointed by in the presence of Edim, or is it that you need either it needs to be schiro elokita, somebody who we know always works for you, your regular hired worker or your regular harvester or whatever, or if not, he needs to be appointed with Edim, or maybe not, even if he's in the first case of the Mishnah, that is when he says b'yad shluchish or shoyl. So one possibility is that when do we say he's potter in the first case is if the shliach is schiro elokito, so there's no edim that he's a shliach, but it's a known thing this person is always sent as a shliach. If there were edim, then we said over there that Rav Chisda would say he would be chayev even if he didn't tell him to send it via shliach, and then we learned over there that Rava said that no, even if it was made with edim, all it amounts to is saying this is a trustworthy person. If you want to send it with him, go ahead and send it, but not that I'm saying that as soon as you give it to him, I agree to accept responsibility. Okay. So now, turning to the Gemara, we say biyad abde chayev. What do you mean? If he sent it via his eved, then the shoyl is chayev. Yad eved ki yad rabbi. The hand of the eved is an eved knani, that is like the hand of his master. It should still be considered it's in his master's rishus, and therefore, how can the shoyl be chayev at that point? So Shmuel says, you're right. The Mishnah, when it talks about an eved, must be talking about an eved ivri. The goof of an eved ivri doesn't belong to his master. Only his maisi yadav does. Therefore, the eved is considered an eved ivri is considered an independent actor. As soon as when it's taken out, when you say send it to me with your eved, when you say to me that I should send it with my eved, once I hand it over to my eved ivri, yes, it's out of my rishus. And then
if it was an Eved Knani,
Rav Amar, after the time of the Eved Knani, Rav says you don't even have to say that. You could even say that the Mishnah is talking about an Eved Knani because it's the equivalent of the Shoyl saying to the Mashil, hit the animal with a stick and it'll come to me on its own. So therefore, in other words, once it leaves the owner's chaser, once it leaves the owner's chotzer, even though it's in the hands of the Eved Knani, who is considered Yad Eved Ki Yad Rabbi, at that point, once it left the Mashal's chotzer, you, the Shoyl, have accepted responsibility for it. So therefore, it works even with an Eved Knani. Rishonim discussed the question, by the way, are Rav and Shmuel necessarily arguing? Tosfos says that yes, that it has to be that Rav and Shmuel are arguing, and since the Gemara is going to go on to say we're going to try to bring a proof to Rav and then slug it up and say it's not really a proof, that would mean the halacha is not like Rav, but rather the halacha is like Shmuel. On the other hand, so it only works by an evidim. On the other hand, the Rosh and some other Rishonim say that they're not necessarily arguing. Shmuel is explaining one possibility. Rav is explaining a different possibility. They're not necessarily arguing. The actual consensus of the postgame is like Tosfos' explanation. They are in fact arguing, and the halacha is only like Shmuel. So therefore, in other words, if he's sending with an Eved Kanani, then it's taken not out of his rishus. Okay. If we learn in a brayso that if a person borrows a cow, because the brayso distinguishes and says that if he sends it with his son or his shliach, then there's the shoyel of chayev. Biad avdei potter, but if he were to send it, if the mashal were to send it via his own eved, then the shoyel of potter until it actually reaches him. So we have a contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. So according to Shmuel, it's very easy. You could say the Mishnah is talking on an Eved Ivri. Therefore, once he gets it, it's out of his master's Rishus. Therefore, the Shoyal at that point can be Chayev. The Braisa is talking about an Eved Knani where it's still considered in the master's Rishus till it reaches the Shoyal. Therefore, he's Potter. Elo the Rav Kasha. But according to Rav, you have a contradiction between the Braisas. How are you going to reconcile it? The answer is Omalach Rav, Loi Temen Nasa Ka Omalai Ela Ema Be Omalai Hakisha B'makal V'itavad. Rav will say that no. We started by reporting that Rav said that in our Mishnah, once he says send it to me with your Eved, it's the equivalent of him saying hit it with a stick and it'll come by and it'll come on its own. Meaning it doesn't matter who's actually with it at the time. He's saying as soon as it leaves your chotzer, I will take responsibility. No, let's change that a little. Not if he says that, but that rather the Mishnah is talking about that he actually says that. When is the Mishnah talking about that? If he sends it biad avder, he would be potter. If he sends it biad avder, he would be chayev. That would be talking about when he says hakisha b'makal v'hitavon. When the shoyel l'chatchila says hit it with a stick, it'll come on its own, and that's it. I'm a chayev myself. In what happens there as soon as it leaves your chotzer. Meanwhile, the mashal decides, you know what, instead of that, I'm not just going to hit it with a stick and let it run over to him by himself. I'll send it with my eved. That doesn't change the situation. The shoyel already accepted the responsibility. In other words, you hit it with a stick and it'll run from your chotzer to mine. Exactly what it sounds like. As soon as it leaves your chotzer, I'm taking responsibility for it. I expect that it will run directly to my chotzer.
Why don't you say directly I'll take responsibility for it?
That's the way of saying. In other words, don't bother sending it with anybody. All you have to do is hit it with a stick and it'll start running to me. And as soon as it gets out of your chotzer and it comes into my chotzer, Actually, the truth is, Tosfos discusses a little bit that it may not necessarily be that it has to actually get into the shoyel's chotzer. It can get into a side street where then Mashiach can be effective, as we'll talk about Mashiach now.
But that's the question.
Okay, it's the same kind of thing. Kenyan chotzer also there's no question. But the point is, once it leaves your chotzer, so only in that case would Rav say that the Mishnah is saying if you sent it with the Eved, then you become chayev as soon as it left the Mashal's Mishnah. Rav is not disagreeing with the Mishnah. I mean, he's an Amora. Ordinarily, he can't disagree with Mishnayas. But once in a while, we say Rav Tano Poli, but not really a Mishnayas and one Brisis, but whatever.
Yeah.
The point is, we're not going to try to say that Rav is arguing with the Mishnah. We're trying to say that he's going to explain the Mishnah as talking about a specific case. Which is also, by the way, when I mentioned before that the Rosh says Rav and Shmuel are not necessarily arguing, that's part of it. Shmuel may figure it's a doichet to say that the Mishnah, when it mentions an Eved, is talking about that one specific case. That yes, it's talking about an Eved Kanani, but only when he said Akisha B'makal V'hitovo. It's an odd thing to say that. It's more likely to say that the Mishnah is talking about an Eved, says Shmuel. Okay. The Itmar, because in fact we have a discussion about this very point. Hashileni Parotcha, if one person says, lend me your cow, V'omalei B'yadmi, and the other person says, who should I send it with? V'omalei, and the other one says, don't bother sending it with anybody, Hakisha B'makal V'tovei, just hit it with a stick and it'll come to me.
There we go.
Omer of Nachman, Omer Rav Rav, or Omer Rav, which is the key thing we're bringing this in. Kiven sheyotzes mirshus mashal v'meisa. If once it leaves the rishus of the mashal, and at that point it dies, chayev. Then at that point the shoyel is chayev. That's the point. In other words, so we're saying that is how Rav would understand our Mishnah.
meaning just leaving.
Once it leaves, the marshals are sure. Again, as we talked about before, it can either be mitzad the dinim of shoyl, because at that point he accepted on himself the responsibilities of a shoyl, or it can be mitzad the dinim of arev, that once he says, get it out of your guardianship, out of your reshus, then at that on my say so, then I'm becoming chayv.
Correct.
Yeah.
He's becoming arev. How do you say arev in English?
Guarantor.
Right.
There are certain practical differences in halacha there would be between those two situations, between whether he's a shoyl and between whether he's a shoyl or whether he's an arev. Anyway, by the way, so Tosfos brings up the point that you were asking about Shayla Bavilin. Tosfos point brings it up in Dibra Maskel Omer over here and says the difference is, Tosfos says, when you have that the owner, before we talk about using an Eved, and we said that works because the Eved stands in place of the Baal. But that's when the Baal himself was going to be hiring himself out or lending himself out to work for you, whether with that animal, whether with something else, as we discussed previously. Here he's not sending the Eved. Here he's not sending the Eved to lend him out that you should be able to do work with him, or that he should be able to help with the animal or whatever. It's just he's sending the Eved along to watch the animal. It's the equivalent, since the Eved is his property, that's the equivalent of sending two paras, of sending two cows. We don't, there's no shayla b'vayim involved over there.
Yeah. This is raising the issue, though.
Because that's what they have to point it out. You pointed out that they also, yeah. Okay. All right. So the Gemara says, name a Messiah like. Okay, should we say that this statement that Rav said about the Takish of Amako Vatavoy, should we say that we can prove Rav's point from the following Braise, which says exactly the same words that he himself said. Hashileni paroska, va'amalei biadmi. If one person says, lend me your cow, the other one said, the mashal says, who should I send it with? Va'amalei, and the shoyl says, don't send it with anybody. Hakishu b'mako v'itavei. Kivin sheyotas mirshus mashal v'meisa. As soon as it leaves the rishus of the mashal and it dies, chayev. Which sounds exactly like what Rav said. However, Omer Ravashi says not necessarily. Hmm. The Braisa may not mean the same thing as Rav said, even though they're the same words. Even though the words are exactly the same. So the Torah Chaim points out, we know there's a general rule that Mishnayos and Braisas are not necessarily meant to be so, to drill down to the details. They can give you a general statement, and the Gemara will have the job of untangling what case exactly that refers to. And Amora, being from later generations, being closer to the time when the direct transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh is coming to a close, which is, as we learned before, Sofer Ra, the end of the writing of the Gemara, marks a new stage in the transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh. From then on, we just have what's already written. We don't develop, you know, there's not really developing new halachas on our own, based on our own logic. So. And Amora has to explain more clearly what he says. So if Rav is making a generic statement, we can assume it applies across the board. But if a Braisa makes the same generic statement, we can maybe assume that it applies only to one specific case. And that's what Rav Ashi is going to point out. Namely, well, how is it? Because what could the Braisa be talking about? Suppose that the Shoyl's Chatzer was inside, not inside, but further back from the street than the chotzer of the mashil. Meaning, in other words, like this. So the mashil has a chotzer, the owner of the animal has a chotzer that's open out into Rosh Hashanah. The shoyl has a chotzer further back from the street than that. The only way for the shoyl to get in and out of his chotzer is by going through the mashil's property.
An easement, in other words.
Yeah. The point is, therefore, if the mashil is going to is going to hit the animal and it's going to start running, where is it going to run? Naturally, it's going to run into the inner chotzer. So automatically, it's going to run into the shoyl and then into the shoyl's property. If he sends it off, it's most certainly going to go there. But let's say, for example, they were across the street from each other. Let's say each of them had their own independent entrance to Rosh Hashanah. So let's say the only way to get the animal from one chotzer to the other one was going to be through Rosh Hashanah. Not necessarily. Could we say that the Braisa is implying that the shoyl is willing to accept responsibility as soon as the animal leaves the chotzer of the mashal?
Only in the case
where automatically, once it leaves one, it's going to go into the other. Okay, the truth is not automatically necessarily. Some of the Mephoshim talk about situations you might have over here. There might be kind of a no man's land between. There might be like a hefker area between the two of them. Whatever. The point of the matter remains that still It's going to be...
The mashal has to go through...
Necessarily, when the animal leaves this chotzer, the only place it's going to be able to go is to this chotzer.
Right.
As opposed to, if there's other ways that it could go, maybe we could say not. So again, the braisa might mean that. So the braisa is not really a proof to Rav, where Rav is making a statement more generically, and again, being an amora, if he meant it to apply only to that specific case, he would have had to say so. Otherwise, it means he means it across the board. Always, even if you're across the street, even if you're a couple of blocks away, whatever... If the shoyel is willing to accept that responsibility, it means he's willing to accept that responsibility. You can't prove that though from the braisa.
So you're saying whenever a braisa says, anytime the amoraim can go and specify that, pin it down to a specific situation. But they didn't mean that as a general situation.
Yeah.
But if an amora says something, he has to be more specific.
He has to be more specific.
And pin it down to some more specificity
right.
activity
yeah.
than a braisa.
Exactly. And that Tosfos brings over here, when we talked before about whether Rav and Shmuel are arguing, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hanano that this is one of the proofs that the halacha must not, that Rav and Shmuel must necessarily be disagreeing, and therefore that the halacha is not like Rav. Otherwise, why is Rav Ashi troubling himself to go and take this braisa, which on the face of it says exactly the same thing as Rav says, and trying to shtel it ayin to not say the same thing as Rav says? Must be because halacha is not like Rav. Okay, the Rosh counters to that, and not necessarily. It's the derech of the Gemara to do like that, to try and bring to try and then show that it can't necessarily be used as a proof, even if we accept his basic position. Anyway, okay. So the question is, Ihochi Ma'ala Memra. Okay, but Fakert, if you're going to explain the braisa that way, then what's the chiddush? Of course. Yeah, if the animal only has one way to go, and as soon as it leaves the mashal's chotzer, necessarily it's on its way to the shoyel's chotzer.
Well, it could pass through without necessarily.
No, but as soon as it arrives in the shoyel's chotzer, he's going to have kinyan chotzer on it. You don't need mashicha, you don't need nothing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Tell him anything.
And so, what's the chiddush? In other words, yeah. The answer is loitzricha deik gaziosa. No, but the chiddush and the braisa, if we explain it the way Rav Ashi is saying, might be suppose that the mashal's chotzer has gaziyata, which means corners and then alcoves and whatever, little places where instead of the animal running through the entrance to go into the other chotzer, it might instead go and hide out in one of those corners, in one of those alcoves or whatever.
And get bitten by a snake.
And come on. The point is, in other words, not necessarily, and then whatever, and then it might die. So you might think then...
The corners are not considered part of the
shul's chotzer. No, they aren't. They're part of the mashal's chotzer. The mashal himself doesn't have a square chotzer. He has a chotzer that's oddly shaped. It has, whatever, it has different crevices and whatever on the sides. Maybe then we could argue, in that case, maybe the shul does not have smichus das. Duma kaima chotzer b'lo azla osir lehevya. You might say, well, after all, maybe the animal is going to run away and hide out in one of those crevices. And die over there, let's say, and it's not going to come straight to me, and therefore I'm not willing to accept responsibility for it, even though I'm telling you Hakisha b'makil v'vihitovay, I'm still not, I don't have full smichus das that it's actually going to do that until it actually at least leaves your chotzer. Kamash malanda sam chadaite, that is the chiddush that he does have that smichus das, and therefore and therefore once he says Hakisha b'makil v'vihitovay, then yes, once he hits it and it starts running, then already it means he accepts responsibility for it. Yeah. And he's aware that there are these crevices and whatnot, yeah, and he stole it. Okay. Fine. So that's how it stands then. So we have Rav and Shmuel's respective ways of understanding the Mishnah, of the case of the Eved in our Mishnah, whether it's an Eved Knani or whether it's an Eved Ivri. And again, we have the Machlokas Rishonim within that. Are they arguing or are they just each one giving a different scenario?
Most likely arguing.
If we say they're arguing, which is what Tosfos and most Rishonim say, then halacha is like Shmuel, because halacha is usually like Shmuel and Dinim Amunis. If we say they're not arguing, then the halacha can well be like Rav, that the halacha can be like both of them, each in their case, Eved Ivri versus Eved Kanani. That's how the Rosh holds. Okay. New topic. Well, slightly new topic. Omer Rav Huna, Hashoyo Kauder Machaveri, if somebody borrows an axe from somebody else, Boka Boy Knoi, if he actually starts splitting wood with that axe, then he's koine it until temporarily, until the period is over. Loi Boka Boy Loi Knoi, but if he did not yet chop wood with it, then he was not koine.
Meaning of damage during
No, we have to figure out what we mean. Lamai, for what purpose are we talking about whether he's koine it or not? Ilang lo oinsin, are you going to say that it's a question of the chayiv and the oinsim of it? Suppose that he borrowed the axe on Sunday, he intended to start chopping wood with it on Tuesday, and in between on Monday an oinus happened, and we're asking what...
On the knowledge or the consent.
What?
That's with knowledge.
No, he borrowed it with consent, obviously. He didn't borrow it. The question is, Maishna Pora, the Mishas Shela. Why would it be any different? Then, for example, you borrow a cow, you become chayev in anything that happens in immediately from the time of Shela. Why do we think it should be any different than the ass? Why should it only be chayev in Oinsen? Come Tuesday, yeah. Elo lachazora. No, what we mean is, what Rav Huna is saying about the question, whether he's koiner or not, is regarding the question, at what point can the mashil change his mind and say, you know what, you were asking about this yesterday or the day before. Can the mashal change his mind once he lent out the thing and say, never mind, I want it back. This is it. According to Rav Huna, once the guy started chopping wood with it, then at that point he was koinah with it in the sense that now the mashal is not able to take it back unilaterally.
The minute he starts using it.
Loy bakaboy, loy mati mashal hodabe. If he didn't start chopping wood with it, then the mashal was able to change his mind and say, actually, I want it back, and be able to get it back. And the poshim say, give
why don't we say I'm shachar enough? He cannot change his mind.
Because this is what we're going to discuss. This is what the Gemara itself is going to discuss. We know that Mashiach works by when you're being koina something. Does it also work by a shomer? According to Rav Huna, it does not. So the Mashiach itself, this we're talking according to Rav Huna, we just said Omer Rav Huna. Yeah. So according to Rav Huna, that's the point, that's the essence of what Rav Huna is saying. The shoyl doing Mashiach on the thing is not an automatic kinyan on it until he actually starts using it.
Why Rav Huna thinks this way?
Because he says that the whole we learned before back in the Hazav, that the whole concept of whether Mashiach is koyder or not, we had a machlokas over there, whether Mashiach is koyder midaraisa or only midrabanan.
Right.
Either way, I mean, the halacha is it's only koinim midrabanan. In that case, the rabbanan may not have made that takana when it comes to shomrim. One thing is, Mephoshim say, a logical reason behind it, once he started chopping wood with it, fine, you don't want to allow the other guy to take it back, because what, you know, you started chopping and all of a sudden the guy's going to take his axe back and now your work stays half finished. Rashenkin, before you started on the work, fine, it's not that big a deal. He takes his axe back, fine, you'll go borrow an axe from somebody else. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the definition of a mashal, yeah. Nevertheless, though, once the other guy is koinah for 30 days, let's say, or whatever, then the shoyl, the mashal, does not have the right to take it back unilaterally. If they both agree, of course, that's different. And the shoyl always has the ability to return it early. He can always say, you know what, I thought I needed it for 30 days, and it turns out I only needed it for 2 weeks. But, yeah. Okay. Upliga d'Rabami. Now, this statement of Rav Huna disagrees with the statement of Rav Ami. D'Amar Rav Ami, ha-mashal kaudim shel hekdesh, if a gizbar of hektish lends a treasurer of hektish, who has various objects of hektish under his control, if he lends out an axe belonging to hektish to somebody else, ma'al, then at that point he has committed me'ilah. He, the gizbar, lefitova tanah shabai, he hasn't committed me'ilah on the full value of the axe, though he's only committed me'ilah on the tova tanah of it. Tova tanah is because the point is, as soon as he gave it to the other guy, as soon as the other guy did Mashiach on it, he was koneh. Now, what we're saying, though, is, by the way, he's not koneh the full value. The me'ilah has not taken place on the full value of it, only on the tovah tanah. Tovah tanah is, you have, the other guy owes you a favor, basically. Now, how much money would you be willing to spend, Rashi says, that the other guy should have you tovah tanah, that the other guy should feel that he owes you one? That's the amount that we consider to be the value of the me'ilah that the gizbo will have to pay hektish. Tosfos discusses a little bit, Tosfos discusses the ins and outs a little bit of it. Why wouldn't we say that the whole axe goes out to chulin, and why shouldn't he have to pay the full value of the axe? Doesn't matter. So the very fact that you took an object out of the possession of hektish and gave it into somebody else's possession constitutes me'ilah.
Because to the
amount of Tovah Tanah, right?
Yeah, Tovah Tanah
is much smaller than the value of the axe. Tosfos gives that as one of the answers, that the value of the actual use of the axe, the value of the work that the guy will have gotten out of using the axe, is less than the Tovah Tanah. Therefore, you're being machmer on the guy making him pay Tovah Tanah. But you're not making them pay the full value of the axe, because the axe exists and can eventually be returned to Hekdesh. Okay. However, the other guy is now allowed to chop wood with that axe, even l'hatchila. Even if he knows that, even if eventually he finds out that it came from Hekdesh, once it was given to him, once it was given to him, and once the Gizbo gave it to him b'shogeg, and therefore committed me'ilah by taking it out of the Rishus of Hekdesh, at that point it's considered out of the Rishus of Hekdesh.
Wow.
Now, any hanal you have from it is chulin. Therefore, the friend can use it.
Go ahead, enjoy.
Now we have to ask. V'iloi k'noi. Now, if you're going to say that the friend was not yet koine it as soon as he picked it up, amai ma? Why would the gizbar have committed me'ilah as soon as he gave it to him? V'amai chaver mutzal l'vakei l'vachachila. And why would Rav Ami be saying that the friend is allowed to chop wood with it l'vachachila? Lehed nehedre. Let him return it to Hekdesh because he hasn't yet been koine it. V'loi nik l'kne. He won't be koine it. V'loi limal, and there won't be any me'ilah. The fact that Rav Ami is not saying that. The fact that he's saying that the gizbar immediately committed me'ilah as soon as he gave it to the other guy, the shogig, and if the other guy can now use it, l'chachila, shows that as soon as he did meshicha, as soon as he picked up the axe, he's koine. Therefore, that disagrees with Rav Huna that said that meshicha does not work by shogig. And furthermore, pligad Rav Allah. Furthermore, what Rav Huna is saying also disagrees with what Rav Allah is saying. The Amr Rav Allah, k'derech shetikna meshicha b'lekuchos, just as the Chachamim made a takana that Mashiach works when you're buying something, as we learned in Hagav, so also the Chachamim made a takana of Mashiach when it comes to Shomrim. That Shomrim becomes Chayev. Oh, yeah. At the time of Mashiach, yeah. I mean, right. Okay, so Tosfos actually, well, now that you mentioned, since you're mentioning only after Mashiach, Tosfos says it really depends. For example, we learned back in the sixth paragraph, we talked about the case where one person says, watch this thing for me, and the other guy says, Hanach Lafon, I put it down in front of me. No Mashiach was done, and yet we say that he becomes a Shemachina. So therefore we see, Tosfos says, that you don't need Mashiach. Tosfos says, what it means is, we don't mean when we say, Tosfos learns, we don't mean as far as the dinim of when you're chayim, that you don't even need mashicha for. As soon as it left the possession of the other guy, as soon as hanach lefon, I put it down in front of me, you'll already be chayim. What we mean over here, Tosfos says, tach tikna mashicha b'shomrim, is as far as the din that we were just talking about, that once mashicha was done, the owner of the axe or whatever it is can't change his mind anymore and demand it back. Not like Rav Huna said that even after you did Meshicha, he can still change his mind until you actually start chopping with it. Rav Elazar is saying, this is how Tosfos learns, that it means that once you did Meshicha, it's too late. But he became Chayev in Gneva, Vaveda, Onus, or what have you, even before Meshicha. Now, the Rambam actually learns differently. The Rambam learns that it means, that it literally means when he becomes Chayev. He only becomes Chayev at the time of Meshicha. How would we explain the Hanach Lafonai? We learned about it before. We could be talking about Hanach Lafonai could mean in my Rishus, or in my Dalet, not in my Shur, in the Rishus necessarily, in my Dalet Amos, for example, where there is Koneh Medrabon on it. Okay.
And how does he explain that?
So that's the thing. If he says Hanach Lafonai, then even though there was no Mashicha, he's Koneh by Kenyan Dalet Amos. Therefore, he becomes Chayim. That's the equivalent of Mashicha. But for example, if the Hanach Lafonai took place in Rishus Rabim, the Taka wouldn't work, according to the Rambam, because there wasn't Mashicha. Our Gemara is saying, you need Mashicha. We learn also like that in the Braise, Kashem Shetikna Mashicha B'lekuchas, Kach Tikna Mashicha B'Shomrim, just as the Chachamim made a Takana of Mashicha when it comes to buying and selling. When it comes to buying and selling, we know that Mashicha means that at that point, neither of them can retract from the deal anymore. Kach Tikna Mashicha B'Shomrim. So also, they made a Takana of Mashicha. So again, according to Tosfos, the Takana is the same kind of thing. It's the Takana, at what point can they not change their mind anymore? According to the Rambam, it's at what point does the Shomer become Chayim? And the Braise continues with another detail. Just as karka can be acquired in three ways, as we learned in Kedushin, kesef, shtar, or chazaka, tach schiros nifnim kesef of shtar of chazaka. So also, when you rent something, which at this point the Gemara is going to assume that renting means you're talking about renting metaltalin, is acquired by kesef of shtar of chazaka. The question is schiros maya vidde. What are you talking about with schiros? So what the Gemara's question is, there's a few different ways that the Rishonim explain it. Rashi explains the question is on the word chazaka. Chazaka, when it comes to karka, is, for example, nal gadol para. You broke open, you locked it, you unlocked it, you broke part of the fence, whatever you did, you did something to the land that shows your ownership over it. When it comes to schiros, that kind of thing, that kind of thing doesn't work. You need just showing your ownership of the thing doesn't work. You need meshicha. So therefore, according to Rashi, the question is why are we saying chazaka? different other Rishonim talk about different other possibilities. The Gemara may be asking about Kesef, because Kesef works for Karka, it doesn't work for Metalflin, or it might be talking about Shtar, because you don't use a Shtar for Metalflin. Anyway.
We bring Chazakot generically?
No, so that's the thing. So the Ritva asks on Rashi, when Rashi says that you can't say Chazakah means Meshicha, why not? May say Chazakah is a generic term, and it means whatever it can't take to come
right,
to.
Exactly.
That's why he, another Rishonim, explained that the question is rather on Shtar. We're mentioning Shtar over here. What does Shtar have to do with Schiris? The Schiris is never accomplished through Shtar. Amar Rav Chista Schiris.
Chazakah would be generic.
Yes. Amar Rav Chista Schiris Karka. So Rav Chista says, right, what you're talking about is Schiris Karka. As soon as Kesef or Shtar or Chazaka is done, then already that's it. The deal is complete. Neither one can change their mind at that point.
By implication, by the other one.
The same way, that's the thing. That's what Rav Elazar is saying. Just as we said that when it comes to Metalpolin, Meshicha is the thing. At that point, neither of them can retract. When it comes to Karka, Kesef, Shtar or Chazaka is the thing. Nudin. Omer Shmuel. Haima de gozo chavitza de chamri de tamri mechaveri. De gozo chavitza de tamri mechaveri. If a person steals from somebody else a ring or collection of figs that were pressed together. A different chavitza de tamri. So Rashi explains, if you look in Rashi, chavitza de tamri, it's the fifth line of the narrow line in Rashi. Tomorrow, mamu dugokim yachad, there are dates that are stuck together. Kori chavitza. V'ispahin chamishin tamri. Let's say there were 50 dates, they are stuck together. There are other Rishonim who learn that it means maybe a cluster of dates, whatever. Anyway, v'ispah chamishin tamri. Now, there are 50 dates in it. Agav hadodi mizamnan menun. Now, if you buy benun nachi choda, if you're going to sell them as a group, if you're going to sell them as one big mass, then the price for it would be 49. But if you were to sell them individually, each one would cost a pruta, and therefore the value of it would be 50 prutas. So now, when somebody stole this, does he have to pay 49 prutas or 50?
Depends if they're attached or not.
He stole them attached. But shouldn't the owner be able to argue that I could have detached them and sold them individually, sold them at resale and gotten 50? So it depends. Lahediyat Meshalam Chamishim Nachi Choda. If he stole it from a Hediyat, then he pays him 49. Then he gets the bulk rate then. Lahekdish Meshalam Chamishim. If he stole it from Hekdish, why do we understand? It's not so simple. Not so simple. Wait. Of course you can't take from Hekdish, but why should we make him have to pay 50 to Hekdish instead of 40? Well, it's not Yad Hekdish Alal Yonah. His other issues is as far as retracting and that. Okay.
So
but Lahekdish Meshalam Chamishim, for Hekdish you have to pay the full 50. Vichum Shaihu, and you also have to pay the Chomish, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Masha'enkin b'mazik d'loy Meshalam Chomisha. Now, this is as opposed to if you were just mazik it. If, for example, the case where you have to pay Hekdish for example, where you stole it, where you committed Me'ila, or in the case of Truma, where you ate it or whatever, not if you were mazik it. If you were just mazik it, then you wouldn't pay the Chomish. Tosfos discusses that a little bit. Yeah. I think if I remember correctly, yeah, there are actually different opinions over here. Tosfos mentions that at least midrabbanon they'd have to pay the keren.
Because
we learn in a braisa that when the pasuk says if a person eats kodesh, meaning truma, then he has to pay the chomesh, prat lamazik, as opposed to if he's a mazik, then he doesn't have to. So now the point is, leaving aside the matter of the chomesh, that's a side issue, the main point is we're saying that we're more machmer on you if you stole from a hekdesh than if you stole from a hedyot. Again, with the hedyot, you'll get the wholesale price, 49.
And here for
with hekdesh, it's the retail price, 50. So, question is, maskiflor of Bibi Barbaya, Lahedyat Amay Mashalam Khamishim Bachikada. Why indeed to a Hedyat would you only pay 49? Name a lay, why shouldn't the Nizik, the original owner of the dates, be able to say, Ano Khoda Khoda Havim Azam Ninalu? I would have sold them individually, I would have gotten 50. You owe me 50. You caused me a loss of 50. The reason is, similar to a case that we learned in Bava Kamma, where one person's animal goes into somebody else's garden or field or what have you, and eats up some of the crops. We said over there that we we evaluate the value of a base saw in that field. We don't figure out the value of just what the animal ate itself, because then that would end up being inflated in price. Rather, we consider, we learned in Bava Kamma, we talked about the details of Asiatosis, both discussed it at some length over here, that basically the idea is we evaluate it in terms of a much larger area of the field. We talked about over there, Rashi learns that you do sort of a double evaluation. You see how much is a base saw in that field worth originally with all the crops in it versus how much is that particular base saw worth minus all those crops. And then in turn, you then evaluate with B'shishim that you figure out 60 base saw in that field, how much would that sell if all 60 of them were intact versus if you have this one damaged one in there. And then the person pays accordingly. The point is he gets a discount. It's a kula on him.
Yeah, because it's divided by 60.
Well, not so much because it's divided by 60, but because the idea is if you're buying a whole field, you're not going to, if you're buying a whole field, you're not really going to pay much less just because one particular part of it is damaged a little bit. If you were just buying the individual plot of land in there, for example, if the animal ate from, it would be a big difference in price. You might pay like half the price or whatever because half of it was eaten. But if you're buying a whole field that has 60 base saw in it and one base saw in it was damaged, you'll knock off a few dollars from the price. Not 1/60 of the whole price. The point is, it's still proportionately less of a discount than there would be if you were just buying the individual one. If you were buying the individual one, you might discount it by $10. If you're buying it as part of a large field, you might discount it by only $5, let's say. Okay, Tosfos discusses that at some length over here and also in Bava Kamma about the details of the evaluation. Anyway, the bottom line is that we are makel on him, that we're makel on him, as we learned over there, because we learned over there, we dash in some sadehu, that we're makel on him, and we make him, instead of making him pay the full retail price of what his animal ate, we're sort of giving him a discount. Well, by the same logic, he stole the 50 dates from the hediot, but wholesale, he would have sold them for only 49. Then that's it. That's all you have to pay is 49. We give him the wholesale price.
In the case of the field, you take the whole field and you.
So again, according to Rashi, you have sort of a double evaluation over there. You figure out you look first at one base saw. How much is one base saw worth when it's intact? Versus how much is it worth with this part missing from it? And then in turn you say, okay, now how much is a field with 60? It's worth 100 when it's full and 50 when it's not, let's say. But based on that, you'd say you'd have to pay 50. But then you figure an entire field, if somebody was buying an entire field like that, if it has 60 base saw in it, it might be worth, let's say, 60 times, less than 60 times 100. You're buying it, you're buying it wholesale. Let's say, for example, then you'd buy the whole field for 5,000. Because part of it is damaged, you're gonna knock off $30 from the price, let's say. So you'd only pay 30 instead of 50. So that's the logic over here. Okay. So now the question then is, remember the Sava Shmuel din hediyot lavka din gavaya dummy. Does that mean you're telling me though that Shmuel holds that the dinim of stealing from and repaying a hediyot, a regular person, are not the same as the ones for hektish? And therefore, when it comes to Hektish, we're going to be Machmir. Well, it's not, but we learn in a Mishnah, in Me'ilah.
In general.
We're asking on Shmuel. Shmuel is saying that if you stole the cluster, the cluster of dates, whatever, then you pay 49 to the Hediyot, 50 to the Hektish. Now, where do we see that Shmuel holds that with Hektish, there's different rules? Batnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Me'ilah, we learned this whole sugya, this next part of the sugya, we had the whole thing pretty much verbatim also in Bava Kamma. Not al even a koda mehektish, if a gizbar took a stone or beam from hektish, which Rashi explains that the Gemara and Chagiga, which we learned a few years back, explains that we're talking about that the person over here is a gizbar, the stones and the beams are in his reshus in the first place because he's the one who decides when they're going to be built into the building. He's the one who's responsible for the maintenance of the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, just him taking it itself, loymal, does not constitute me'ilah because before it was under his control and now it's under his control. It hasn't been taken out of the reshus of Hektish by him picking it up. However, not nala chaveri, but if he gives it to his friend, humal, he committed me'ilah, because now it was taken out of the reshus of Hektish, now it's given to somebody else who's not part of Hektish. The chaveri le'mal, but his friend did not commit me'ilah, because by the time the friend receives it, it's already been taken out of the reshus of Hektish. That part is not the relevant part that we're dealing with over here. The relevant part is the next part of the Mishnah, which continues, B'na b'seich b'seich. Suppose the Gizbar himself did not give it to somebody else, but rather he built it into his own house. Loima, the Gizbar himself. If he built it into his house, and Rashi explains based on the Gemara in Bava Kamma and in Chagiga, that it's talking about he didn't actually build it in as in cut it to size and put mortar on it or whatever. He just left it as it is and put it, let's say, on top of a skylight.
Still be retrieved.
So therefore, it's unchanged. It's unchanged. In
right.
Therefore, loymal, therefore he has not yet committed me'ilah just by putting it on top of the skylight. Until he dwells in the house under that brick to the value of a prutah. Once the amount of time that he spent in the house is equivalent to a prutah, then at that point he's committed me'ilah, because now he's had a prutah tana from Hekdesh.
So if he eats anything after he put the beam, that's it.
Well, eat it, whatever. Even if you just sit there while you rent a house, we can figure it out. Let's say, I don't know, you have, let's say, a house rent. So, you know, let's say, for example, the normal rental for a house of this size is, let's say, I don't know, 100 prutas a month. So then, fine. Fine. Then in that case, one prutah is going to be about a third of a day. So once he's lived in that house for 8 hours, then he's had a prutah. Yeah.
You don't measure it by saying, well, the improvement was worth.
No. No, because again, it wasn't changed at all. So therefore, until the Hanna, the Shavu Prutah.
The changes he covered up the skylight and it was leaking.
Fine, but then he has to live under it to the value of a Prutah. Otherwise, if it was leaking.
In the house.
Fine, if the value.
He's already benefiting the Prutah without it.
He's benefiting once he lives in the house. No, because it's. Okay, so if there was a leak, fine. If there was a leak, then okay.
No, because I'm trying to see, because before he put it on, he was benefiting Shavu Prutah by living for a third of a day.
Yeah.
Before he put it on. After he put it on, he didn't. It's not worth more or less. He completely doesn't.
Well, it does. It affects the quality of life in the house, because then before you had a hole in the roof, and
okay,
now.
Because I added that.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's the way I
now. Now, the point, we still haven't gotten to the question about Shmuel, because now is going to come the question. Now, we know that one time Rav Avohu was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Yechanan, he was sitting and saying the following statement in the name of Shmuel. We can deduce from this case of this Mishnah, that if a person lives in somebody else's chotzer without his knowledge, then he still has to pay rent. We learned about this in Bava Kamma, the whole question of zen nan and chotzer. We're saying over here that Shmuel is saying, based on this, the same logic, the same logic as we're saying, once you live under that brick, once you put that brick on the skylight, you're living under it to the value of a shor prutah, at that point, effectively, you owe Hektish the value of a prutah, and therefore you've committed me'ilah. By the same logic, if you live in somebody else's house, without their das, then you have to pay him rent. Same logic.
If you apply to your house,
well, the point is, in other words, we see that's the question. We see there that Shmuel equates Hektish and Hedyet, and here in our case of the 49 versus 50 prutas, we say he's different. So, yeah.
Where
does he stand? Yeah. The answer is, okay, so Amalei Rav Yechanan, Hagoros Agro takes it out, it wasn't in the Gemara in Bava Kamma either, Hagoros Abach puts it back in, whatever, anyway. Hodebe Shmuel Me'ahi. Shmuel changed his mind about that. Shmuel changed his mind about the second din, about that we learned from that, Hador B'chotza Chaveri, Shalemi Daitei, he said, no, you can't prove from the case of Hektish to that case. So therefore, yeah, after all, then Shmuel does hold the difference between Hedyet and Hektish. Okay, the question is, Remaid Me'ahi Hodebe. Okay, who says that we know that, fine, we want to say that Shmuel changed his mind on one thing. How do we know that he changed his mind on the one on the case about the Mi'ilah? Maybe he changed his case about the other case, maybe he changed his mind about the other case, the 49 versus 50. By the way, that may be, the fact that Gemara is asking that question may be why we're taking out the Amalei Rav Yechanan. If Rav Yechanan tells him that I know for a fact Shmuel changed his mind on the case of Hektish, not to talk about, but if some of the Gemara saying that, then we can well ask, how does the sum of the Gemara? No. Okay.
So the question is,
which one did Shmuel change his mind on? Yeah, so you want to say that he changed his mind on the case of Hekdesh, and therefore he's being consistent. He always says there's a difference between Hekdesh and Hekdesh, but maybe he said there's no difference in the case of the date. You always pay 49, Hekdesh or Hedyot, and therefore, the answer is, no, we know for a fact that it must be the case of Me'ilah that Shmuel changed his mind on.
Meaning
the other one, meaning the one that's the one that's not its main place, is not in Ar Sugya, its main place is in Me'ilah. We're bringing it in here, Derech Agav. Namely, Kedid Rava. The reason would be because we have to use Rava's, on the side it says Rava's, logic. The Amar Rava, Hektish, Lebidas, Kehedyat Midas, because Rava says that when you use Hektish, Shaloi Midas, it's the equivalent of Hedyat Midas. Meaning, what does it mean? When we say, Adar B'chata Chaveh Shaloi Midaita, the other guy doesn't know that you're living there, and we're talking about, do you have to pay him rent or not? The other person is a human being. He may or may not know. Hektish is the property of the Edishter. He knows. So it's not relevant to talk about whether it's Midaita or Shaloi Midaita. Rashi adds the detail that, look, it's not like it's possible to be Moyal and Hektish. Nobody's going to stop you. Rashi learns it a little bit differently than what I said. What I said is from some other Mepharshim. I don't remember which one now. Rashi learns like this. What it is like this. When it comes to a Hedyot, you can have Midaita, you can have Shaloi Midaita. He's able to be there and prevent it, or he's not able to be there or prevent it. Hedyot is, there's nothing physically preventing you from using it. But the Torah imposes that if you do, you have to pay for Me'ilah. So therefore, it's not relevant to talk about Midaita or Shaloi Midaita, where you have somebody who is capable of stopping you or not. There's other answers as well. There's other explanations as well. One interesting one is we talked about in Bava Kamma, this whole concept we said in the end, Zen Enem Zalei Chassid, you don't have to. So if you're living B'chatzah Chaver Shaloi Midaita, you don't have to pay rent. However, that's only if it really is Shaloi Midaita, as opposed to if the guy specifically told you, get out of here, I know you're here and I don't want you here. If you want to stay, you have to pay rent. Well, here, the Eivishter is telling you in the Torah, you want to stay here, you've got to pay Hektish. You've committed Me'ilah. Therefore, on that basis, Shmuel would have to realize in the end that you can't learn from the Mishnah in the Ila to the general case of Sodech Lahavos Leischar, that by a head you should or shouldn't have to pay him rent. Therefore, on that basis, we have to say that Shmuel must have changed his mind on that, realizing the Svara, which later on Rava explicitly stated, and therefore we're left with, he says there's a difference between Hektish and Hedyot over there, and there can be a difference between Hektish and Hedyot in the case of the dates as well.
Okay. Are we done?
No, we have a little more. We'll try to see if we can get submission in the next few minutes. Omar Rava. Here's another case talking about the different the different values of things at different times. Before we were talking about wholesale versus retail, here we're going to have a similar topic. Omar Rava. Hani shkuloi de tabru chavisa de chamra l'chanva. If porters who are carrying a barrel of wine broke it, they were carrying a barrel of wine on behalf of a storekeeper who usually would have been taking the barrel and selling it at retail, cup by cup, individually. Now, let's say that this barrel of wine on a market day would sell for 5 zuz. Other days, not market days, it sells for only 4. So how much do they have to pay? 5 or 4? So it depends. If they want to pay him on the market day or right before it, in other words, that as soon as market day comes, he's going to be able to sell it. Then they can return him a barrel of wine. Because then, we'll talk in a second if we have time, that the Rambam learns distinctly differently, but let's first talk according to Rashi. They can pay him with a barrel of wine because, fine, market day is going to come. He can sell that wine like he was going to originally. But if they're going to pay him any other day, then they have to pay him 5 zuz because he can say, I would have gotten 5 zuz out of it. Therefore, you can't expect me to wait until the next market day to buy another barrel of wine. So you have to pay me. You have to pay me in money. You cannot pay me in wine. This is how Rashi learns. If they want to pay him on the market day, they can pay him a barrel of wine. which
instead
is,
of hay?
Instead of having to pay him five zuz, they can have bought a barrel of wine a couple of days earlier, and now give it to him, and that's it. We paid off what we need to. You'll be able to take that barrel of wine and sell it. But if they wait till after market day, they're going to have to pay him five because he has the ability to say, look, you know, like this, I would have sold it for five. I would have made five zuz on
during
market day. You can't expect me to have to wait for next market day. Yeah. Now, all this applies, though, only if he did not have other wine to sell. But if he had other wine to sell and he didn't sell it, then he should have sold it. The fact is, this is how Rashi learns it. If we see that this guy had other wine, which he didn't end up selling on market day, then it means he wouldn't have bothered selling this one either. Therefore, there's no reason to put them on the hook to pay him five. Then no matter what, they only have to pay, then no matter what, they can give him a barrel of wine even if it's only worth four. Or they can give him money which is worth four or whatever, yeah. Prices fluctuate. That's not a matter of ribis. But then, nobody's borrowing anything from anybody else or prepaying or whatever. Okay. However, by the way, when we're saying that they pay five, you're not paying the full five. They still have to deduct agatirchei. The value of his trouble, because after all, like this, he would have had to sit there selling at retail all day. So like this, there's the fact that how much is the difference in price between that and him sitting poil bottle, that not having to sit there and sell cupful by cupful of the wine. So you have to deduct that he sort of gained from the fact that he didn't end up selling this wine. Would made Barzanyasa, and you also have to deduct the amount that you would pay for somebody to make a hole in the barrel to be able to get the wine out. That's a skill that costs money. Or the Sneh explains a little bit differently, that the not so much the cost of hiring somebody to do it, but the difference in price between a barrel that does and doesn't have a hole in it. Because they, whatever it is, because the point is they broke a barrel that didn't have a hole in it yet, and they're now giving him one that does. So the difference in price has to be deducted also. The Rambam has a whole different understanding of the situation over here, which is that we're not talking about so much when they pay him. Well, the question is basically, does it matter when they broke it? According to the Rambam, when they broke it doesn't matter at all. And he explains kind of the other way, as opposed to the Ravitz, for example, says that it does. And he explains it kind of the other way around. If they're paying him on market day, then they have to pay him the full value of it, unless he has other wine. In which case, he'll sell that other wine. They didn't cause him such a loss, and therefore they can pay him a lesser amount. But if he doesn't have anything else to sell, they cause him a real they have to give him the full value, not like Rashi says fakir, that they just give him a barrel of wine and that's it, they're potter. They'd have to rather pay him the full value, that if they're paying him money, they have to pay him full five zuz.
We didn't see this case in Bava
Kama. No, we didn't have this case in Bava Kama. We're mentioning it over here in connection with the concept of different things that are worth some different amounts of retail and wholesale. Yeah.